Welcome to the Accenture MIT podcast series. Here's Daniel Jackson, professor of computer science at MIT.
In my last podcast, I talked about multitasking and how our habit of flitting from one task to another is making us less productive and more stressed. So perhaps the internet really is making us stupid, in the sense that we're spending less time thinking deeply and more time switching from one task to another. But there's a more sinister possibility, that our use of computers and the internet is making us more stupid in a more concrete way by literally rewiring our brains. This is the hypothesis of a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains by Nicholas Carr, which I mentioned in my first podcast. It's a controversial claim, and some skeptics dismiss it, but there's a lot of interesting evidence and anecdotes that suggest, to me at least, that we should take it seriously. This podcast is based on Carr's book and gives a brief outline of his argument. Here's the main idea. Back in the 19th century, it was believed that your brain developed during childhood, but that once you were a grown adult, it no longer changed much. It was as if the brain was like concrete poured into a mold. Once the concrete sets, not much happens. As an example of this viewpoint, here's a quote from Santiago Ramón y Cajal, a great Spanish biologist and physician and a Nobel Prize winner. In the adult brain centers, the nerve paths are something fixed, ended, immutable. Everything may die, nothing may be regenerated. Even in 1913, when he wrote that, Cajal was regarded as conservative, and views in the field were beginning to change. I'm not a biologist, but I know Cajal from a wonderful book he wrote called Advice for a Young Investigator, which is all about how to become a good researcher. In addition to a lot of good advice that's as current today as it was 100 years ago, he has some suggestions that sound rather dated. My favorite of these is that to be successful, a researcher should marry a rich woman who can support him. Not exactly a politically correct opinion nowadays, although maybe it's actually good advice and that every researcher, male or female, would do better with a rich spouse. Anyway, back to brains. This view that the brain structure is unchanging began to fall apart in the 20th century, and now it's widely accepted that the brain is what is called plastic, meaning that it adapts itself as you grow older by growing new neurons and new connections between them. This is very good news for people who have suffered from brain damage. In one amazing story that Carr recounts in his book, a man named Michael Bernstein, who had suffered a terrible stroke when he was only 54 years old, lost the ability to control the left side of his body because of damage to an area of his brain. With physical therapy, he managed to regain some movement, but his left hand remained crippled, and he had to use a cane to walk. He then enrolled in an experimental treatment program run by a neuroplasticity researcher called Edward Taub, who had him move that hand and the corresponding leg for hours every day for weeks on end. By the end of the treatment, he'd regained control and was able to walk without the cane. But there's a bad side to neuroplasticity too. It's that our habits can actually cause our brains to be rewired in a way that makes them less effective. Because our brains reorganize themselves to do the tasks they are called on to do, this means that if you do one kind of task much more than another kind of task, your brain will adjust to give it more room, and thus more computational power. Jeffrey Schwartz, a professor of psychiatry at UCLA, who Carr quotes often, calls this survival of the busiest. What this means is that if you stop exercising your mental skills, you don't just forget them. The space your brain uses for those skills gets handed over to other skills that you do instead. In case you doubt that this really happens, consider this. In 2008, some researchers at UCLA actually scanned people's brains while they did searches with Google. Carr says they actually put them inside an MRI machine with special goggles and touchpads, but I'm skeptical of that bit. They split the subjects into two groups, experienced web surfers on the one hand, and novices on the other. And they found that the experienced web surfers had very different patterns of activity, covering much more of the brain. The hypothesis was that they'd developed new neural paths. Then they took the novices, had them spend an hour a day surfing the web, and a week later, they did the experiment on them again. This time, they found that the novices had a pattern that matched the experienced surfers, and that areas that had been dormant in their brains now lit up with activity. The researchers concluded that the brains of these naive subjects had been rewired in only a few days of surfing. If just a few hours has that effect, imagine what years of surfing might do. So if our use of computers is causing new areas of the brain to grow, then which areas and capabilities are shrinking? The ones associated with reading and deeper thinking, Carr says. As we spend less and less time doing the kind of meditative reading that you tend to do when you sit curled up with a novel, our brains are becoming less able to do that kind of thinking. We do lots of reading online, but it's mostly very superficial. We're scanning for features and not really pondering anything deeply. So here's the trade-off that we're making. The time we're spending online might be making our brains more nimble, and we're probably becoming more tolerant of constantly switching from one task to another. Our ability to quickly scan a page of text and find something we need might be improving too. But all this is coming at the expense of being able to think deeply and creatively. Jordan Grafman, who's the head of the Cognitive Neuroscience Unit at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, put it this way to Carr. Does optimizing for multitasking result in better functioning? That is, creativity, inventiveness, productiveness? The answer in most cases is no. The more you multitask, the less deliberative you become, the less able to think and reason out a problem. Several experts told Carr that they believe time online makes you more conventional in your way of thinking, less able to think out of the box with new ideas and challenging traditional lines of thought. A fascinating study was done last year by Clifford Nass, a professor at Stanford. His team gave a bunch of cognitive tests to two groups of people, some heavy multitaskers and some not. The multitaskers were much more easily distracted by small details and were much less able to concentrate on a task. Nass described them as suckers for irrelevancy. Another researcher, quoted by Carr, was even more forceful. He said that being online all the time, we're, quote, training our brains to pay attention to the crap. The other half of Carr's book is about reading and how the technology of books has likewise left its imprint on our brains. You might think he'd argue that reading books is natural and that all this online activity is a new phenomenon. Interestingly, he argues exactly the opposite. The kind of heightened state of awareness you're in when you're online is a primitive human state, the kind of state you need to be in to hunt well and to avoid being hunted. Reading technology took a long time to develop all the way from etchings on stone to printed books, and it's only really in the last few hundred years that large numbers of human beings have developed the habit of sitting down and reading to themselves in deep concentration. Even punctuation is a new technology. 1,000 years ago, most texts had no punctuation at all and were read in a long stream of characters, and the poor reader had to expend a considerable amount of effort decoding it. It was only in modern times that typography and printing, and a huge investment in education, made it possible for people to read so quickly and efficiently without constant distractions. In my next podcast, I'll turn to a different question, the advantages and disadvantages of multimedia and hyperlinks. Does the way the web presents information make it easier to assimilate ideas quickly and effectively? Or could it be that things are not so straightforward and that some of our assumptions about the new technologies are misguided?
Copyright 2010, Daniel Jackson. Music copyright 2010, Chris Bremer, from pianosociety.com.